We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
All right, back in here, hour number two. Great to have you guys aboard today. Sarah Spencer covers the Hawks for the AJC. She'll join us coming up in about 20 minutes as we'll talk Atlanta Hawks for a little bit. A little quick detour from football. We'll get to the hardwood and then back to football. But a couple of things coming off of Brian Baldinger's interview. And again, you'll hear from DJ Shockley coming up in about 3 minutes here on something the Atlanta Falcons could do, but I don't think they should. So the NFL, and we wrapped up with Baldy last segment talking about the playoffs last night. Just a couple of quick takeaways from those games. Number one, Packers beat the Rams 32-18. And it just felt like that game was over the moment the two best players Los Angeles has clearly showed their frustration. Aaron Donald was getting, and I don't want to call it he was getting worked, because I don't think anybody can truly handle Aaron Donald, but if you can get a stalemate against Aaron Donald in the trenches, you've done a hell of a job. And the Packers' offensive line was able to infuriate Aaron Donald to the point where he got flagged for unnecessary roughness, 15-yard penalty. And then we saw when Green Bay got to the red zone and they ran Davante Adams in motion, and then he came back again and they ran that little flare out towards the pylon. Jalen Ramsey couldn't keep up. There was a communication breakdown, and Jalen Ramsey was jumping up and down in anger. He was ticked off. Somebody made a mistake. The moment Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey showed their frustration, I knew this game was over. Green Bay wins 32-18, and boy, they played more of a physical game than I thought they could, honestly. Like, this is a team that has been able to run the ball with guys like Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon and Jamal Williams, but they stuffed it down the Rams' throat. And then on the other side of the ball, Za'Darius Smith, Rayshon Gary, the Green Bay Packers, their front seven, they've got some physically imposing dudes. I think they are going to easily get to the Super Bowl. And if they match up with the Chiefs in the one seed from the NFC versus the one seed from the AFC, I think we are in store for a unbelievable Super Bowl. But we got to get there first. And then secondly, last night, Buffalo beats Baltimore 17-3. Did not expect this game to be low scoring. I thought this would be a 31-27 type game. I thought we would see a ton of points. But the big takeaway from last night, Buffalo showed they can win with defense. They can win low-scoring games. They can win without a running game. Zach Moss got hurt last week. He was out. Devin Singletary is not the most prolific running back by any stretch. And Brian Daboll basically said, we're not even going to try to run the ball. Their first 14 plays, I believe, were all passes with Josh Allen. So it really told me something, that Buffalo has no run game. And then on the other side of the equation, Baltimore's got no passing game. And that's where we go here right now. I think the gig is up for the Lamar Jackson, Greg Roman reincarnation of the Kaepernick offense from San Francisco from 8-9 years ago. You are not going to go far in the NFL playoffs with Lamar Jackson if he can't throw the ball. Lamar Jackson is one of the five best running backs in the NFL. Lamar Jackson is probably in the bottom 10 in the NFL when it comes to being an actual quarterback. That's just fact. I couldn't believe Collinsworth last night. Collinsworth actually said, "Oh, you know, Lamar Jackson was a really good pocket quarterback in college. I'm not really sure what's going on here at this level." Like, Chris, he was a good pocket quarterback? In 3 years at Louisville, his career completion percentage was 57%. If you're completing 57% in college, where they throw bubble screens and slants and very high percentage looks, what do you think he's going to be at the NFL level? He's exciting as hell. But give me Lamar Jackson in the pocket and have him try to go through progressions in reads. And then, oh, by the way, use touch on a deep pass, use touch on a swing pass. Did you see last week how many times they ran that like orbit motion play with a running back flaring out of the backfield or a wide receiver looping around out of the backfield? And Lamar Jackson's like 5 yards away from his intended receiver, and he's throwing bullets at him. And then he's throwing wobblers. Like, Lamar Jackson in the passing game is either an occasional deep bomb to Hollywood Brown, or he hits Mark Andrews on an RPO over the middle. And eventually, in the NFL, if you are that predictable and that one-dimensional, you will get figured out. These defensive coordinators are too smart. These defenses are too talented to get beat like that. It's no different than the Wildcat. 13 years ago in Miami, it became the new, it was the new thing, right? It was the new wave. It lasted all of what, a year and a half? And we still see teams do it occasionally. Taysom Hill will run it with the Saints, Cam Akers with the Rams. Doesn't work. And we've seen these college RPO offenses. And look, you can run it in bits and pieces. The Titans use it a little bit with Tannehill. The Chiefs use it a little bit with Mahomes. But when it's the entire basis of your offense and you fall behind, you're toast. You are toast. Lamar Jackson is going to have to evolve into a quarterback in the pocket. Or Lamar Jackson is going to be the next Kaepernick, the next RG3. He's not Kyler Murray. He's not Russell Wilson. He's not Patrick Mahomes. Those guys are polished quarterbacks. You look at the dual threats in the NFL that are succeeding today, they are truly the dual threats. Great arms, accurate, anticipatory throwing. Mahomes, Wilson, Murray, Watson. Those are the true dual threats that don't have a shelf life, barring injury. Patrick Mahomes is going to be around for 15 to 20 years. Kyler Murray is going to be around for a decade plus. Now, Kyler is very, very small, but he's already shown you in 2 years he can sling it. Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson are two of the five best quarterbacks in the league. I think Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman and John Harbaugh, they better come up with a plan B. Because 3 points against Buffalo ain't going to cut it. All right, Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. So, national championship Monday night, right? All Falcons fans sitting there watching Najee Harris for Alabama doing his thing, crushing Ohio State. He crushed Florida. He crushed Notre Dame. He's a stud. He might be the best running back Alabama's ever had. And that's saying something when you talk about other Heisman winners like Derrick Henry, Mark Ingram, a guy like Trent Richardson. Alabama's had some freaks at running back, but maybe none scarier in the running game and receiving game than Najee Harris. But DJ Shockley was on the Midday Show earlier this week with Andy and Randy, and they were talking about Najee Harris and the Atlanta Falcons. Take a listen.
Najee Harris all day long.
Yep.
I mean, you watch what this dude does throughout a ball game, and he could easily have won that Heisman. He could have easily been the most valuable player in all the country. But the fact that he's around a guy like Mac Jones and Devontae Smith has the crazy highlights, whatever thing that he did that never come up in the stat sheet. I mean, there were times where he should have had a negative or no gain, and he ends up getting 5-6 yards. I mean, his ability to fight through and run through tackles is unreal. And, I was watching him. I was like, this dude's either from Wakanda or he's got, like, vibranium in his legs or something, because it seems like nobody can tackle this dude. I mean, he gets in space. He can catch. He can run good routes. I mean, he's downhill. He's physical. He doesn't get tired. And he's done this all year long. And if Najee Harris is on this roster, I was thinking the same thing last night. If this dude is on this roster, he gives you an instant run game, and it gives you something out of the backfield, and is a three-down back for a long time.
All right, so that was DJ Shockley on with Andy and Randy this past week on the Midday Show. Now, here's the thing. I love Najee Harris. He is going to be a can't-miss NFL stud, but there's absolutely no way in hell the Atlanta Falcons should take him at 4. And I know Falcons fans are sitting back saying, all right, we got Arthur Smith. He had Derrick Henry. Let's draft Najee Harris. boom, running game figured out. No. Because I don't believe the Falcons' offensive line is good enough as currently constructed to pave the way for Najee Harris to do anything remotely close to what Derrick Henry did. Now, we had Baldy on last segment. Baldy was mentioning how, look, the Falcons have a bunch of first-rounders on their offensive line. The Titans do not. You know, they're invested. Yeah, they are, but they're not performing. Now, I don't know that Arthur Smith, as good as he is, could miraculously come into Atlanta, sprinkle pixie dust across the offensive line, and all of a sudden they're going to look like the Cowboys' offensive line of 1993. I don't foresee that happening. But I just want to tell people how bad of an idea it is when you are a bad team with a high draft pick to take a running back. I'm going to give you some precedent here, okay? So this should squash any hope of a Falcons fan hoping for Najee Harris at four. I'm going to give you three examples, all within the last 5 years. 2016, NFL draft, fourth overall pick. The Dallas Cowboys select Ezekiel Elliott. Now look, Zeke's a top five running back when he's healthy. He's had a hell of a career in 5 years, right? Let me ask you something. What have the Cowboys accomplished in January? Much less in the Zeke era. What have the Cowboys accomplished in the last 25 years in January? Nothing. All right, example number one. Example number two. Let's go to the next draft. 2017, eighth overall pick. Roger Goodell walks up to the podium. With the eighth pick in the 2017 NFL draft, the Carolina Panthers select Christian McCaffrey. Falcons fans, this team's in your division. I don't even need to ask you, but I will anyway. What have the Panthers accomplished in 4 years with Christian McCaffrey, who has also been banged up a lot the last year or so? Nothing. That's the answer. Nothing. 2018 NFL draft with the second overall pick. The New York Football Giants select Saquon Barkley, running back out of Penn State. Hey, Giant fans, how's that working out? Yeah, he's been hurt. Yeah, he had a great rookie year. Giants sniffed the postseason recently? No. The Giants haven't made the playoffs since when? The whole Love Boat thing with Odell Beckham, 2014? Uh-huh. So here's the thing. You can be a fantasy football guy and you know, sit on your fantasy website and say, oh, man, I can't wait to draft Najee Harris in my first round of my fantasy draft. That's great. But if the Falcons take him at four, it would be nothing more than a fantasy move. Zeke in 16, McCaffrey in 17, Barkley in 18. Yes, you need to have a good running back. But you know what? If you have a great offensive line, if you've got a quarterback and an offensive coordinator, you can pave the way for a running back by using it that pick in the second round, the third round, the fourth. Oh, by the way, when did Derrick Henry get drafted in 2016? Second round, 45th overall. So I am imploring the Falcons and every Falcon fan out there that has any, you know, grand delusions of these dreams of Najee Harris at four, don't do it. And it won't work. It will not. He might end up being good. But does it make the Falcons the Titans of last year or this year? No, I don't think so. All right, 404-741-0929 is the number. That's also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can get me on Twitter at Nick Kale, K-A-Y-A-L. We'll transition a little bit to some hoops. Sarah Spencer from the AJC next on the Nick Kale Show. All right, welcome back in, Nick Kale Show. Great to have you guys in here on a Sunday as we take you up until 2:30 today. We'll lead you right into the AFC divisional game between the Chiefs and the Browns. But right now, time to transition and talk a little hoops as we welcome in Sarah Spencer. Does a great job of covering your Atlanta Hawks for the AJC, and she's with us now on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Sarah, happy New Year. Good to have you back on again. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm doing well. By the way, is it still okay to say Happy New Year to you when we're 17 days in, or am I already starting this interview off terribly?
No. I think Happy New Year works. I've been saying it, but I've also kind of lost all track of time these days. So if it's not okay, you're not going to hear any complaints from me.
All right, I got you. Thank you very much. All right, so let's start with the game last night, and then we'll branch out big picture with his team. Going into the game, I really didn't have many expectations. I didn't know what to think, honestly, because Portland is shorthanded. We are shorthanded. The Hawks are coming off of the back end of a, you know, back-to-back with Utah on Friday night. Although there was a point, you know, early third quarter, once C.J. McCollum was ruled out for the rest of the game, I'm thinking, all right, maybe we have a chance to steal a game here. You know, Clint Capella and Trae Young are having a great night. It's us basically now up against Damian Lillard. Are you surprised with the way the game played out in the second half, considering Portland lost one of their two stars?
Well, I don't know if I'm surprised. The Hawks have been kind of unpredictable the last several games. Trae Young looked like he was kind of getting out of his funk a little bit. And then, the past two games, it kind of looks like he's kind of slid back into it. And then Clint Capella had 19 points in the first half and then ended up with, I believe, 25 overall. So Portland kind of made some adjustments because the Hawks were not shooting well from three. I think they made one three-pointer in the whole second half. So Portland just kind of made some adjustments and made it a little bit harder for the Hawks to get into the paint and then let Damian Lillard do his thing. And the combination of all those things led to another Hawks loss. So they continue to kind of be in a slide here. They're shorthanded, but, you know, this is a weird season. Everybody's going to be a little shorthanded, whether it's injuries, whether it's COVID protocols. You got to figure it out. You got to figure out how to be a good enough team or a pretty good team, even when you're missing quite a few people. They might end up getting Danilo Gallinari back relatively soon, soon-ish, which is a good sign. But this team has got to figure out how to find some consistency, and they need to figure it out pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, this was going to be a challenging road trip, shorthanded or not. We know the game with the Suns was postponed, but Phoenix, Utah, Portland, all teams with winning records going into the game where the Hawks were supposed to play them. And really, if you look at the way this season has played out, they have now lost six of their last seven, and maybe it's actually seven in a row if Philadelphia doesn't get ravaged by COVID, which is the Hawks' lone win in this stretch. I mean, this has been a team that has really struggled since that blowout victory over Brooklyn.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is they just really can't find their three-point shot, and they also, this team is still struggling defensively, which is what they want to hang their hat on, but they really haven't been able to do so. On one hand, they're missing Chris Dunn, of course. Clint Capella does provide an upgrade. They were without Cam Reddish last night, but, you know, even if you have a lot of moving pieces, again, you got to figure out how to get stops in crunch time. But this is a team that doesn't really know how to do that yet. If you look at a lot of guys on the roster, especially a lot of the young core guys, they don't know how to win in the NBA yet necessarily. You know, the past 2 years or 3 years, you know, have been losing seasons, lottery seasons. And so, you know, you have a 16-point, I was actually talking to Clint Capella about this yesterday, you know, you have a 16-point lead against Portland. How do you keep it? Because Portland's not going to go quietly. Portland's got Damian Lillard, who can do, you know, insane things with the basketball. So how do you buckle down and make sure you limit him enough down the stretch? And obviously it's not just him, but they weren't able to do that. So I think as much as shots aren't falling from three for the Hawks, I actually think that a lot of this is defensive as well. Although, of course, you know, the Hawks kind of go the way Trae Young goes, and he's been very off his game the last, honestly, maybe six, seven games. He's just been really off. Trae Young is obviously an all-star talent. He'll pull out of it. He'll figure it out. But there's a number of things going wrong right now, to be honest with you.
Let's unpack a little bit of what you said there. Let's start defensively. And Sarah Spencer from the AJC is with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So defensively, you know, from your vantage point, is it an effort thing on that end of the floor? Is it a schematic thing? Are they getting caught in bad matchups, you know, whether it's pick and roll defense, protecting the rim? What are you seeing defensively that this team is lacking?
Well, you know, I've asked the guys about that a little bit, you know, kind of periodically. A lot of them will point to communication and organization, and will point to, okay, if we got confused, we got turned around with like one of our sets later in the game, and then, you know, before we knew it, we had given up. It's two or three possessions later, and you've given up several baskets at that point. So I think a lot of it is communication and organization based off what players have told me. But then, you know, like, you know, sometimes it does maybe sound effort-based, but I don't know. Like, you know, Capella last night said it was hard for us offensively, and defensively we kind of let go a little bit. Mm-hmm. Against teams like that, whenever they get good looks, it's what they do. It's easy for them. So, you know, that's not necessarily me looking at it and saying they're lacking effort. That's me asking Clint, hey, what went wrong in that second half? And he said defensively we kind of let go a little bit. So some of it, I think, you know, might be execution. I don't know if it's all effort. And sometimes it can look like effort when really it is just like people not being organized enough. I think some of that might be communication, but there's a combination of things that are going wrong. And I also think, to be fair, they're going to have to figure it out again quickly, but to be fair, they have 9 new guys on the roster, which is pretty absurd.
Oh, yeah.
And the guys that they returned from last year, you know, a lot of them are a little younger, and 2 of their defensive kind of specialists are quieter guys. Mm-hmm. And DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, who are going to have to, you know, kind of mature and take on a bigger role and not be afraid to speak up and speak out. So I think, you know, to be fair, they do have a lot of new guys, and the guys they return are a little young and are going to have to mature in that way. But, you know, these are the kind of games that you can't lose, you know, when you're up 16, they dropped several games in a row to, you know, the Knicks, the Hornets, you know, the Cavs. Those are the games that you need to be able to defensively limit those teams, you know, that are not always offensive powerhouses, you know? So I think there's a handful of things, honestly.
The other thing you alluded to was Trae Young, the last 6 or 7 games having some struggles. You look at his numbers, and his assists are almost where they were last year, right about 9 per game. But the scoring is down about 6 or 7 points per game. What are you seeing on that end of the floor with Trae? Is it trying to get too many people comfortable and involved, not taking his shot enough? What do you attribute the little bit of dip for Trae from an offensive standpoint production-wise?
Well, you know, when Trae Young was a rookie, from the get-go, he was doing a lot of things well, but his 3-point shot was not falling, and it didn't fall for a little while. And then it came, and then you started seeing Trae Young be, you know, the Trae Young we know. And right now, you know, it's not like he's not passing extremely well, and you know, he's still Trae Young. He's still got that crazy vision. He's still kind of a wizard on offense. But his 3-point shot is not falling. And I honestly don't know if it's teams doing that much. You know, Utah definitely did something different on him. You know, they definitely bothered him from the second the ball was in his hands. And that's why he tied a career low with 4 points, which hadn't happened since early in his rookie season. But not every team is doing that. I think this might be one of those situations where, you know, you struggle a little bit and then it kind of gets at you mentally a little bit. And it's just about how you can bounce back, you know. There have also been times, a few of these games, you know, Trae Young gets to the line as well. You know, he's one of the 2 to 3 best guys in the league when it comes to consistently drawing fouls and getting to the line. And for several games there, his numbers getting to the line were way down, which might point to him being a little bit less aggressive, like you were saying. And even last night, he mentioned that, you know, Portland was giving him lanes late in the game, but he was trying to find guys and kind of you know, kind of set them up when maybe he should have been more aggressive. But, you know, it's also hard because he was having a really tough night shooting from the field. I think he was 7 for 23, so 30.4%. He was 1 for 9 from three.
Yep.
And then, you know, then he leads the team in scoring because he goes 11 for 12 from the line because he was getting those calls that, you know, that he likes to get that get him there. So I think there's a few different things. I mean, I think now teams have a lot of Trae Young on film and they're trying to adjust a little bit for just how good he is. I think, you know, then basically what has to happen is, you know, the Hawks have to, and Trae have to adjust a little bit and kind of learn how teams are playing him, and just kind of go from there. But you know, it happens sometimes with shooters, you know, you go through droughts and then it's more about how you bounce back, you know? I did look after that Philly game, which obviously they were playing without several guys, including Ben Simmons. He had a good game against them. I was kind of looking for him to bounce back a little bit, but then Utah played him really, really tough. So I don't know. Right now he's kind of going back and forth a little bit. And, you know, when Trae Young struggles, the Hawks struggle. So there's, you know, there's a few things that are, I think, throwing him off his game a little bit. But, I mean, he's still Trae Young. He's still an all-star starter, you know, in year two. So I think he's just going to take – I think he's just going to, you know, kind of figure out how teams are playing him and look to bounce back.
Sarah, final one for you. We got about 90 seconds left to go. You talk about bouncing back. The Hawks will have the chance. They've got Minnesota twice in the next three games with Detroit in between, two teams sitting around three wins this year. This should be a good opportunity to maybe get back above 500. But what are you hearing about Minnesota tomorrow for the Martin Luther King Day game? Because we know the Timberwolves had their game postponed on Friday because of COVID. Any details?
Well, right now I think they're planning to play, and the Hawks are good to go. I know they had that Phoenix game postponed, but that wasn't because of anything on their end. So right now I haven't heard anything to the contrary. And I think you're right. I think that this is a good opportunity for the Hawks to have. They're completely off today. They have two home games in a row against these are winnable games, but of course, you know, you're going to have to actually take care of business. But, yeah, no, I think this is a good opportunity for them to try and get back on track.
Sarah Spencer, great job for the Hawks, for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much. Yep. Did we lose her? I guess we lost her. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. Appreciate it. Sarah, of course, joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. When we come back, the Hawks, I tried to tell some hosts at the station, oh, the Hawks are 4-1. I think we can win a first-round series. All right, well, you've seen the last seven games. That's the ebbs and flows of an NBA season. That's why I wasn't getting too carried away. We'll hear from the coach and a couple of the players next as we continue here on the Nick Kale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. All right, welcome back in, Nick Kale Show. Great to have you guys aboard today. We'll get back to the football coming up in just about 17 minutes, as well as our boy Jarvis Davis, Falcons reporter for 92.9 The Game. He'll join us coming up at 12:20 today. You're going to hear from Harry Douglas at 1. And if you miss Brian Baldinger, we'll get to him. You'll hear an encore presentation of Baldy coming up in the final hour, 2 o'clock today, as we're with you until 2:30. So the Atlanta Hawks back in action tomorrow at State Farm Arena. They'll take on the Minnesota Timberwolves, barring any more COVID issues with the T-Wolves. The Hawks have had a game postponed against Phoenix because of COVID issues with the Suns. The Timberwolves had their game postponed on Friday, so we'll see if they're able to put together a team. But you heard Sarah Spencer last segment. As of now, the game's scheduled to be played. But we will see in the coming hours if the Hawks and the T-Wolves get ready to play on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. All right, so a couple of things with the Hawks, and you're going to hear from Lloyd Pierce a couple of times here in the next 10 minutes. So last night, you lose to Portland by 6. Look, the Hawks were shorthanded. Portland was shorthanded. They lose C.J. McCollum, another blow in the second half. But Damian Lillard was just too much. 36 points. And, you know, Trey was good. Capella was good. But the Hawks are just really so shorthanded right now that you're just really hoping and praying that they'll get healthy. And they'll get healthy quick. And if they can find a way to get to the end of January right around 500, I think that would be a major win. Because you're going to have an easier stretch coming up here the next three games. They're currently 5-7. They get Minnesota, Detroit, and then Minnesota again. Minnesota and Detroit both currently sitting on three wins this season. But then it's going to get tough to wrap up the month of January, as you are going to have to deal with the Bucks, the Clippers, and the Nets to close out the month. So you're going to have to deal with Giannis, Kawhi, Paul George, and, oh, by the way, Brooklyn, who now, yeah, I know you beat them 114-96, but now it's not only KD, it's not only Kyrie, it's James Harden, who just got his trade and got his wish, got forced out of Houston, and he is now with the Brooklyn Nets. And we have a new super team in the NBA. Durant, Kyrie, James Harden. And, you know, you think about that from an NBA perspective for a moment. I'm thinking back to Kyrie and LeBron. Like, LeBron James made it work with Kyrie Irving for, what, 3 years? Kevin Durant has been with Kyrie Irving for less than 3 months. And the Brooklyn Nets were already like, you know what? This is not enough. I need more. KD, Kyrie, it might not be enough. Let's go get James Harden. I don't know how all that's going to work out because there's only one ball. But I've always thought James Harden, prolific scorer, doesn't make his team better. Like, James Harden, a lot like Lamar Jackson, will only take you so far. And I think what separates the greats in the NBA from just the stat compilers, and look, James Harden is top five, top 10 for sure in the NBA. He just doesn't make his teammates better. Dribble, 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 shoot. Dribble, 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 shoot. Like, you've seen him with OKC, with Durant and Westbrook. You saw him in Houston with a cast of characters, including Westbrook again. And the Houston Rockets with James Harden would only go so far. So now he's going to play with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. And I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. Kevin Durant is the best scorer on the planet. He's reminded us, even coming off of an injury, he's still a bad man. Kyrie Irving, incredibly talented, but there's all the dynamics of, you know, chemistry and mindset. And, you know, James Harden has always kind of flaked out in the playoffs. Kyrie Irving, as good as he is, has always needed the great guy along. He's always been a Robin to a Batman. And Kevin Durant, even though he's got a championship, he needed to go to Golden State. And I never kill these guys for doing it. I actually give them credit because they're willing to bury their ego and put aside, you know, what people are going to say about them for the sake of a pursuit of a championship. Like, I've always thought, NBA fan that says, well, Michael Jordan did it the hard way. Dude, be quiet. Michael Jordan had Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, Phil Jackson. The whole narrative of Michael Jordan did it the hard way as opposed to the easy way. You think Michael Jordan was ever willing to do what some of these stars have done today and form up with two or three other stars? Not a chance. You think Kobe would have done that? Not a chance. Kobe wanted Shaq out. He's like, I want to do it by myself completely. In a way, I commend it. In the other way, it's like, dude, you're making your life a lot harder. So we'll see what the Hawks run into with Brooklyn. But let's get to the head coach, Lloyd Pierce. A couple of things from last night. And we'll start with the offense down the stretch and why they went away from attacking the basket.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the length bothered us. You see a few plays at the end where they're deflecting the lobs, the lob attempts. I thought their length bothered us of getting downhill. I thought they pulled the gym in a little bit more on some of the pick and rolls. And we missed a lot of threes. We were 5-for-30 from three, and so I pulled the gym in as well.
Look, 5-for-30 is not going to cut it. I would say 9 out of 10 nights in the NBA. And if you do not attack the basket and force the refs to blow the whistle and get guys like Trey to the free throw line, it's going to be a long night when you're forced to settle for three and you shoot below 20%. No doubt about it. Look, the first half, this game felt like a two-on-two basketball game. It felt like Trey and Clint against Damian and CJ. CJ gets hurt. He goes out in the second half. Lillard, obviously, too much. But let's hear from the head coach, Lloyd Pierce, on how well his big man played.
Just Clint being Clint in pick and rolls, you know, the ability to get behind the defense, to play behind the defense, to create opportunities around the basket. This is the team that plays, you know, deep into the paint on the pick and rolls. They're not up the floor with their bigs. Trey does a good job of getting into the paint and being able to drop it off. And I thought I thought he was active around the rim, and I thought he was running in transition to get some easy opportunities to get behind the defense.
Can certainly make the case that was Clint Capella's best game as an Atlanta Hawk last night. 25 points, 15 rebounds, 11 of 16 from the floor. I mean, he was active from jump street, and this is kind of what we expect. Not 25 and 15, but Clint Capella now averaging right around 13 points, 13 rebounds per game. This is exactly what I'm hoping for. And if that point total goes up a little bit in the coming days and weeks, that would be great. But the fact that Clint Capella is healthy, he's active, and he's actually activated and on the floor is a major win for the Hawks, who have been waiting for this guy to really break out. And maybe last night's performance is a launching point for him to go on a really good run these next couple of months. Trae Young, 26, 11, and 7 in the loss. But speaking of Trey and speaking of Lloyd, let's hear one more from the head coach talking about the late charge call down the stretch on Trey Young.
They said he wasn't moving. They said he was out of the restricted area. It wasn't a challenge. They were able to review it, and they confirmed, according to them, I haven't seen the play, but they confirmed to me that he was out of restricted area and the defender wasn't moving. So I haven't seen the play over. It was on the opposite end, but the fact that they reviewed it, there's nothing I can do to challenge it.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I didn't think that was a great call, but down the stretch, you know, I think the frustrating thing for me is I want Trey to be getting these calls. You know, these are the kind of calls that stars get late in the game in the NBA. And Trae Young is a star. So I thought Trey deserved that call, didn't get it, replay, yada, yada. But ultimately a moot point as the Hawks lose by 6. But look, great opportunity coming up because it's going to be tough at the end of January, but you get Minnesota, Detroit, and Minnesota the next three games. If you can win 2 out of 3, you get back to 500. If you win all three, you're above 500. So you got to get these games now. You get healthy, and just, as they say in that movie line, hold on to your butts because we got a tough stretch coming up with the Bucks, the Clippers, and the Nets, probably three of the top five teams in the NBA. All right, 404-741-0929 is the number, 404-741-0929. If you want to jump in on some Hawks conversation, we'll come back, and we'll get back to some of the Atlanta Falcons conversation. And I saw my man Carl Dukes tweet this past week about taking the best available player at 4 if you're the Atlanta Falcons. But there's a couple of guys that, even though they might be best available, I think would be a mistake for this new front office, possibly Terry Fontenot, in a couple of days or weeks. We'll delve into that on the other side. Jarvis Davis coming up at 12:20. Stay there. It's the Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and the Radio.com app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.